Well, we are here for this week's culture segment, and I am very privileged to be on the phone with Bill Beach. Bill is director of the Center for Data Analysis at the Heritage Foundation. Bill, welcome.
It's great to be with you, Lisa.
Great to have you. And I do know, and I think you say somewhere here in your bio or beyond, that you are a numbers cruncher, which, you know, I'm going to try not to doze off even thinking about that.
Gosh, well, somebody's got to do it. You know, it's one of those responsibilities.
Those of us who are the liberal arts majors are just like, oh, I guess we're glad you guys exist, because then, okay, you know, we can foist the responsibility for that on you.
Yeah.
Well, I am very familiar with the Heritage Foundation. I actually worked in D.C. for a while at the Washington Times, and was involved with you guys a bit while I was out there. I was at Insight Magazine back in the late 90s. So we know the good work that you guys do, and you specifically are responsible for, I guess, what is really a lot of analysis of what is guiding our research and the conclusions that we have related to everything from Social Security to debt to Medicare, Medicaid. Everything that's happening with numbers and with what we are paying and what we are not paying when it comes to our government. So, well, I need you to talk to us a little bit. You know, maybe some in our audience are saying, ugh, what in the world does this have to do with me? But I just read something that you wrote in conjunction with Rob Bluey, and it is called Slay the Beast, How You Can Save Us from the Massive Debt. First of all, I want you to know that I don't want to save us from the debt. I don't want that to be my responsibility. Why are you foisting that on me?
Well, it is, unfortunately, going to fall on the shoulders of anybody listening to this who's under the age of 30.
That's not me.
There are 115 million people, roughly speaking, between the ages of 30 and 5 years old. Now, the 5-year-olds don't even know their way to kindergarten yet. So,
yeah.
I'm not really talking to them. But when you talk about a generation of 25 years, 5 to 30 is this generation, that as it goes through its life, and it'll be a long-lived generation, no doubt, will be unlike any other generation in U.S. history, responsible for paying the massive debts of the previous generation. Always in the past, those debts have been reasonably easy to handle. My dad, that was the Depression generation, the World War II generation, the 50s and so forth. They handed a debt to my generation, but it was about a third the size of the economy, which is a pretty big debt when you think about it. But still, 30% of the economy, pretty easily handleable. We're handing a debt to this, what I call the debt-paying generation, that will be over 100% the size of the economy. You know, this is like handing this huge mortgage to somebody worth roughly now $387,000 per person and not giving them a house to live in. You just have to pay the mortgage. The credit agencies, Lisa, are just not going to let this upcoming generation roll that debt to their children. And that's why we're out there talking about it right now, and that's why the numbers matter.
Yeah. Well, I think it's fascinating. First of all, we need to talk about the numbers, okay?
Yeah.
And we're talking in the trillions. I think you said we have an economy right now that's about $15
trillion. That's about right.
Okay, and you give the example because none of us understand what in the world that means. I certainly don't. And I love how you talk about LeBron James. Most people know LeBron and know that he earns over $45 million a year. And you say that it would take him nearly 22,000 years to earn $1 trillion.
Right. We have no idea what a trillion is. I mean, it sounds like it's a big number, like a billion or a million, because it's got an illion in there.
Right.
But a trillion is 1,000 billion. $1 trillion is an unimaginably large number, period.
Mm-hmm.
The average lifespan, for example, has got about 2.5 billion heartbeats to it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you went to a trillion heartbeats, you'd be way back in the dark ages. One of the things we like to talk about is a billion seconds ago was 1979. A trillion seconds ago was the year 30,000 BC. I mean, that's back when dinosaurs were walking around or something close to it.
Yeah.
So it is a large, large number. The only point we're trying to drive home there is that if somebody is telling you that you're going to have to repay right now, today, $14 trillion, then you must appreciate the fact that that is an enormous burden. It is not in the billions anymore. It has gone well beyond that. And it is to your your own self-interest as a human being and wanting to live at least as good a life as your parents to make sure that that debt is significantly reduced and reduced right away. I don't care whether you're a Democrat, a Republican, a Stalinist, or whatever, a supporter of Hugo Chavez. You're not going to want to have that on your shoulders as you go through your working life.
Okay. So what we have to understand here, though, is when we're talking about our debt and owing debt, we're talking about owing this kind of debt to ourselves. And I need you to explain what that means, because it's one thing for us to have to pay some country across the Pacific or whatever, but we owe this to ourselves. I don't even understand what that means. And my first thought is, can't we just maybe forgive this? Can't we can't we just forgive ourselves for the spending and just call it a wash?
I wish we could. I mean, that would be the easiest thing in the world. Well, let's back up for a second. What we're talking about is a debt of the United States government, which is called publicly held debt. So the United States government, this government here in Washington, D.C., goes to the well, goes to Wall Street, and borrows money to pay for whatever, I mean, daily operations. Well, who does it borrow it from? Well, most of the money is borrowed from you and me. In our savings accounts, we might buy a treasury bond, or through our 401k programs, or our savings plans that we have at work, we may be buying into a mutual fund called United States Treasuries. In some way or another, about 64% of the debt is owned by individual citizens of the United States. So in that sense, we owe it to ourselves. The rest of the debt is owned institutionally by large banks in foreign countries, foreign governments. China, for example, does not own our entire debt. They own about 9 to 10%, on a good day, 10%. Right now is averaging about 9%, which is still the largest single country in the world that owns our debt. We will pay those countries back in the same way we will pay the citizens of the United States back. The problem is that I own this debt now, on 64 cents on the dollar is what I own of the U.S. debt, and the government is continuing to borrow. So my obligations as a taxpayer to pay other taxpayers the amount that they have to get out of this deal is increasing. That's the problem. The problem is that we will have to pay higher taxes in the future to fund the debt or to pay it back, and that, of course, will slow the economy, which slows our lifestyle, which slows everything. And we can get into the discussion of how that works.
Yeah. Well, because you say, I know you talk about there being four ways to pay debt. You either raise taxes, you lower spending, you inflate everything, or you repudiate the debt, which I'm for the latter, of course. Like I said, just let's ignore it. Let's ignore it and just, try to exist.
That is, by the way, the worst possible solution.
Okay. I guess that's why I'm not the expert on this.
There are many countries around the world that have walked away from their debt, and much to their own regret. Venezuela's done it six times. What happens is that then nobody loans you money.
Yeah.
So you become a credit pariah on the marketplace. You can't, no matter what the interest payments, get money. Let's look at Greece today. They're very close to defaulting on their debt, which is like running away from it. And it's really hard for them to generate any lending to them to get them through their current crisis. So what would happen if we repudiated our debt is we would instantly become a very poor country. That's hard to imagine. But if we don't have credit coming into this country to fund the United States government or to fund private industry from foreign sources, then we have automatically lost about a third of all the credit flows that come into the United States to fuel our way of life. Just think about that. So that is the wrong way to go, and fortunately nobody in Washington is yet talking about that, but they are talking about increasing taxes, and that's very likely, as well as some people are now beginning to say, well, let's just print a bunch of money so we have twice as much money, and then we can use the extra amount of money that we print then to pay down the debt, which is, of course, going to cause inflation. So that there are ways to do it, good ways and bad ways. Taxes, inflation, and repudiation are the bad ways because they hurt people. The best way is to have a very sensible way of reducing your spending so that you don't add to the debt, as well as then pro-growth tax policy changes so the economy is stronger, then it makes it easier to pay down the debt. That's the way we hope everything will turn out, but
okay.
I don't know.
Well, but You're basically saying, and I think this is what we hear, you know, on the news and beyond, is that Congress kind of is having some difficulty lowering their spending.
Oh my.
And or refusing to do so. So what's our hope? What does this look like?
Well, we, you know, just to get to your point about, you know, spending, the debt limit in 2002 was $5.6 trillion. The debt limit right now is $14.3 trillion. So from 2002 to 2010, which is an 8-year period, well, we actually added almost $10 trillion in borrowing. Now, that's not because the revenues were shallow. We had some very good revenue years in there. We had some bad ones as well. But it's because spending increased so dramatically. So for Washington to react responsibly, they need to reduce spending dramatically. And we're talking in the trillions of dollars to get the spending down to where the revenues can supply enough so that we don't have deficits and we don't have to go to the well, or we don't have to borrow quite as much. It is really hard, at least for this Congress, which is a more conservative Congress, actually, even with the Senate in Democrat hands. It's hard for them to understand the magnitude of the spending cuts that are required.
Yeah. Well, and I think where, you know, as we're listening to what you're saying, we're obviously thinking, okay, so where will this really affect us? And by that, I mean millennials and Xers, because I know that, and, you know, this is a little bit depressing to think of, I know that only about 35% of boomers are prepared for retirement. So somehow something's going down there.
That's right.
You know, most of us probably aren't even thinking enough about retirement, but here we are going to have to shoulder this, and all the way down to the 5-year-olds, as you're saying. What is this going to look like for us personally? What is this, you know, attaching, whether it's a number to it or a system of what we have to look at as far as when this hits home, what is this going to look like for the younger generations?
Well, if we don't immediately act, then what will happen is that tax rates will basically double by the time the current millennial generation is in their 50s. I know that sounds a long ways away, but it isn't really that far away. A doubling of tax rates means the economy slows. The government will be taking so much money out of the economy that we won't have as strong a rate of growth. And that means that people's incomes will not be growing as rapidly as their parents' income grew on average when their parents were in their 40s and 50s. And now that's a very important thing to keep in mind, because now let me translate that back into things that actually matter to people. Mm-hmm. We know by looking at country after country that has seen a slowdown in their growth, including this country during the 1930s, that when growth really slows down, maybe goes, it's half as fast, and that's what we're looking for right at right now if we don't do anything. People marry a lot later, or they actually start cohabitation a lot later with the idea of having children. So right now the average man marries at 27. That's a lot older than when I was in my 20s. The average woman at 27 and a half, and we're looking at marriage rates up to 31, maybe 31 and a half or 32 by the middle of this century. That means that children come into a family later in the parents' life. And when they come in later in the parents' life, there usually is fewer children. So the labor force begins to grow less rapidly. That means that when the millennials retire, there'll be fewer children around to actually care for them. It also means you buy your first home later. Usually, when a couple gets married and the first child comes, that's when they do this virtuous borrowing for everything from baby cribs to their home and furniture and appliances. They won't be doing that as soon, and so the economy doesn't benefit from that virtuous borrowing and consumption, and so it further slows beyond that. You won't be saving as much because, you know, basically the economy is slowing down. You won't have as much income, and so you won't have as much income in retirement, or you won't have as much savings for your own education, the education of your children, or your health care. And we also know by looking at every country around the world that when the economy slows, access to health care actually goes down as well. So we could actually be looking at a much less healthy population throughout the 21st century than we had in the 20th and early parts of the 21st century. These are not controversial controversial implications. These are the implications. The well-documented economists and sociologists would assert that that is the correct relationship when the economy slows and income slows. And that's why I'm saying, I think short of bubonic plague and thermonuclear war, there's nothing that really threatens the debt-paying generation so much as this tremendous tsunami of debt which is coming their way, and it's many, many times bigger than what we've even been talking about because of unfunded liabilities and Social Security and Medicare. They really have a duty to get into the streets and demand that Congress change its ways and reform these programs so that they are not going to burden this generation as it goes through its adult life.
Okay. Now, for clarity's sake, because we have a pretty extensive international audience as well, we'll have a lot of folks who will come in and say, okay, well, Bill, hasn't this worked for some countries? Because, you know, like I, for example, was in Norway last summer. Right. Everyone there looks like they're just vacationing during the summer and looking good, and maybe they're living off their oil. I don't know. But why is that not an option for the U.S.?
Well, the countries of Scandinavia have had a very interesting and instructive episode of extraordinary growth in government and a slowness in their economy. There was a time when Norway, Sweden, Denmark all had much slower economies than they do today. And they realized that they couldn't have a continuation of high spending and low pro-growth policies. So in the 1990s, they reversed what had been a 50-year pattern of greater and greater socialism to having openings for more entrepreneurship, more business startups, lightening regulation, actually in Sweden's case, significantly reducing tax burdens, and then putting more people, not on their own by any means, because you still have cradle-to-the-grave health coverage up there, but more and more of those benefits are matched by families and individuals. So even with this little bit of an opening, and highly educated people just like us, they saw a significant uptick in their economic growth. We need to kind of embrace that model, but go well beyond it, because we can do much better than that. But I think that's what explains the suddenness of prosperity up there in the Scandinavian countries.
Okay. So in the meantime, you're saying, and I love the way how in Slay the Beast, you really take these things that are very not understandable for the general populace, and you use great examples to make them tangible and understandable for us. So thanks so much for that.
You're welcome.
One of the examples that you talk about is you say basically that just the economic stimulus that we're doing or in the midst of, whatever, the debt that we're incurring from that is going to cost the average young adult now $280 per month for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, for 45 years, $280 a month. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Okay, well, thanks for that encouragement. Yeah. Okay, so you're saying that is like buying an iPod Touch every month and tossing it out your car window onto the freeway.
That's exactly right. I use that example on college campuses, and that's when I get the attention of all the young men in the audience, because they have been, you know, they have really been saving for the touch of the latest technology. And I'm telling them, you know, you're only going to enjoy that for 1 month, and you got to start all over again. The young women in the audience are more attentive to the, you know, the family things, and I think that's when they really understand, well, you know, gosh, that really will affect the life that I think I really want to leave. But it is, I mean, just thinking about the cost just from this one program, and it was a minor program compared to the $62 trillion worth of unfunded liabilities we have, debt that we have coming our way in Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. It should give you pause and say, well, I'm going to be saddled with that. I better do something about it.
Yeah. Okay, so as we close here, Bill, you need to tell us what we can do right now, what we personally can do, because we need to realize that we cannot be dependent on the federal government.
Absolutely.
So we'll get clued into that. But what are some practical steps that young adults can start doing right now to help realize where we're headed, and in light of that, really take some responsibility for what we can do for our own finances, as well as helping kind of prepare ourselves for taking on this debt?
Well, I think the first thing is don't depend on Congress to fix this. So you got to do some things to protect yourself. This isn't any genius stuff that I'm going to say, but it works. Open a savings account. I mean, even if you can't save more than $10 a week, start there, because that's $10 more than you're saving now. Create a monthly budget. I know that sounds really adult, but it's important not to spend beyond your means if you want to get ahead of everybody else who is spending beyond your means. And don't carry 18 credit cards; just carry one, and pay it off every month, if at all possible. That just makes a huge difference. One thing I would do to everybody who's now in college or just out of college is I would make absolutely certain you know exactly how much money you have borrowed for college. So many kids are going to be totally surprised when they get out of college and realize they got $45,000, $75,000 of debt, and that just they hadn't been keeping track. Finally, I would see a financial planner. You got to pay a little bit for that, but these folks have got great strategies for investments. Once you get a budget put in place, once you're not spending beyond your means, then you can begin to actually make money from money, and that's a wonderful thing. Then, you know, basically spread the word. And make sure every 115 million of you know exactly what's coming down the pike, so you're not going to be burdened with this worst-case scenario.
Well, Bill, thank you so much. Great background, great insights, and great practical advice for us as we assess the situation and see where we are as millennials and Xers looking ahead.
Great.
So Bill Beach is with the Heritage Foundation. Again, we've been talking about Slay the Beast, how you can save us from the massive debt. Make sure you check out more info about him and what he's doing with Heritage at heritage.org. And they have a number of different resources and actually some great you guys do some great polls and quizzes on there as well that are pretty pretty interesting, I think, especially for our generation. So folks can kind of get more info there. Thank you so much, Bill, for weighing in on this and being
My
part
pleasure,
of the conversation
Charlie.
Today.
It's just great. It's just great. And good luck to your program and good luck to everybody listening. Let's get this thing under control.
Will do.